Is the spiritual path a gain or a loss? When the rishis tell us that if you are on the spiritual path, you have to detach from your attachments, we think, well, you know, maybe then I have to detach from my family and then my house and my money and my children and my... And we think it is a loss. You know, I have to give all this up just to reach. I'm not sure if it's even worth it. And initially we resist when anybody tells us give up something we like, then we always say, I'm not so sure. And what we need to understand is, what am I gaining and what am I giving up? If you ask Buddha, you know, when he saw that the world is going to be full of sorrow, grief, suffering and death, he said, I want something which is takes me beyond grief, beyond sorrow. And he gave up his kingdom. He was going to be king in a few years. He gave up his beautiful wife, his newborn child, a son, and just walked away. And we think, oh, that's a tremendous loss. And for you and me, yes, you know, we would never be able to do something like that. But his vairagya, his detachment was so strong that for him, none of this mattered because he was looking for something permanent. So he gave up the temporary to look for something permanent. His kingdom, his family, his all that is temporary. Will not be there. He's not always going to be king. He's not always going to be a father or a husband. And what he discovered was nirvana, the state of eternal happiness, the final state of realization, which not only he benefited, but billions of Buddhists ever since in the last 25 years, you know, all over the world are benefiting from one man's detachment or one man's sacrifice. He sacrificed what he thought was temporary to look for something permanent. And he did not lose his wife and son either. They also joined his movement. They also became monks in the Buddhist, you know, in the Buddhist fold. So they also got enlightened, or at least got on the path of enlightenment. So when you and I start on this spiritual path, we do not have that same detachment vairagya that Buddha had. You know, we say, no. You know, I still like my job. I want to go to work. I want to keep my family, my house. So the masters do not tell us that you have to do that. If you have that much vairagya like Shankaracharya or Buddha, or, you know, then you may, but for most of us, we have to continue to take care of our family, our finances, our job. So they say, do not give up these things, but give up your overwhelming desire for it, the overwhelming attachment, the overwhelming fascination that I have to have this. Slowly, as you are going on the spiritual path, see, when somebody says leave it, then we want to hold on. But as you go on the spiritual path, you will find that automatically these things will go down. My dependence on my family will go down. My strong attachment to things and possessions will go down. There was one, I think I mentioned to you, there was one lady who comes to our meditation class. She's a nurse and she says, every week I used to go to the Valley Plaza just to shop and buy something and look something, whether I need it or don't need it. After she started coming to meditation class, she says, in the past 6 months, I have not gone even once. I have no more desire to go for shopping. Why do I have enough things? That's it. We have enough things, but we just have this desire to accumulate more. We're not saying that you should not have things or home or money and all, but the fascination for it goes down, and slowly the dependence on it goes down. That if I have it, it's good. If I don't have it, I'm still fine. If somebody loves me, it's good. Somebody doesn't love me, it's still fine. So my dependence on things and beings goes down, and slowly you get detached. If the Friday night, if I don't have a party, nobody invited me, very good. Instead of saying, why nobody calls us anymore. No, it's good. I have more time to just relax and be with myself or read the Gita, because, you know, things like that. So slowly what happens is that the fascination for things goes down, And your fascination for this knowledge increases because you realize that this is the permanent happiness. Whatever else I have to leave. If not now, at the time of death, I have to leave my family, my home, my children, my money. But this knowledge will stay with me forever. And this is what is permanent. And that is the benefit of spirituality. So we have to figure out, is spirituality a gain or a loss? Yes, I'm losing something, but then I'm gaining something. And then you have to weigh it on the scale, which one is more important. And once you understand that, then there will be no doubt in your mind. And that's what Krishna is trying to tell us, that what is the path that one should choose. And that's what Bhagavan is telling us. And as we know, Arjuna was doubtful about his duty. He was saying that I will be responsible for the death of so many people. There will be so much death and destruction. So many people will be killed. And so Sri Krishna starts his teaching in the second chapter with the highest knowledge that neither you nor me nor these kings will be killed because we are eternal. Even though this body is temporary, but the soul, the consciousness, can I have my pointer, please? Sorry. Om, the consciousness within each and every one of us is eternal, which he calls as Atma. Atma, the eternal Lord, which is Brahman or consciousness, which is the same in every one of us. Atma, we think of Atma as his and her, Atma is one, appears to be divided amongst each one of us, but there is actually only one Atma, one consciousness, one Brahman that is pervading not only human beings, but also the table, the chair, the mic, the birds, plants, trees, animals. Everything is pervaded and supported by that one Atma, and that is who you are. That's what the message so far we have been studying, that this body is an equipment and the Atma is your higher nature, is your true nature. And we have been listening to this, and some of you must be thinking, why is he keeping on repeating? So we'll talk about that. What is the need to repeat? Because already we have heard it. We have been listening for last so many verses. Why does Bhagavan keep on repeating? So we'll talk about that. Actually, there are only three more verses on this topic. Then Bhagavan will come down to our level, to the level where we work at. Oh, I have my family and my, what am I? So what is my duty, dharma, all that will be explained. So slowly he's coming down to our level. So there are three more verses. So we'll start with verse number 23, chapter 2, verse number 23. Nainam chindanti shastrani,
nainam chindanti shastrani,
nainam dahati pavakah,
nainam dahati pavakah,
na chainam kledayantyapah, na shoshayati marutah. So, enam means this. So, this, he's not explaining who this is because he has been talking for the past few verses. So, this is Atma, the Om, the Lord within us, the consciousness, which is eternal. So, he's expounding on that. He had told us previously that Nitya and Shashvata Purana na Hanyate Hanyamane Sharira, it is eternal, it is ancient. And it is not destroyed. So our true nature is not destroyed. Our body is destroyed. So why is this not destroyed? Why is this Atma, the consciousness, not destroyed? So when somebody tells me something I have never seen, say suppose I have never been to Australia, I have never seen a picture of a kangaroo. And somebody has gone to Australia and comes back and he says, I saw this new animal called kangaroo. He said, can you tell me what it is? I don't know, I never heard the word kangaroo. He says, it has two big legs and two small, and it hops, it becomes very difficult. So he said, okay, it jumps like a rabbit. It is big like, so he'll tell us it is 3-4 feet tall. It has two big legs. So he has a pouch. So he'll try to explain in terms of what I have already seen. It is the size of it jumps like a rabbit. It is the size of a goat. It, you know, all those things, it has the pouch like a pocket. So things that I am familiar with, that's how they explain to us what a kangaroo is. And then I say, oh, maybe I get some idea. And then, of course, if he shows me a picture, then it will become very clear. But in the case of Atma, Bhagavan cannot show us a picture. Okay, this is Atma. You look at it and you will understand it. So he has to tell us in terms that we know. So here he says four things. Atma can never be destroyed. Now in our thinking, there are only four ways anything can be destroyed. Actually, our rishis were amazing. They could classify everything. So he says only in four ways things can be destroyed. So he says there are only four ways anything can be destroyed. So one is na ainam chindanti shastrani. So weapons cannot cut it. Shastrani weapons, chindanti means cut, na enam. This weapons cannot cut. Na enam dahati pavakaha. Pavakaha is fire. Enam na dahati. So fire does not burn this. So fire does not burn it. Weapons cannot cut it. Na cha enam. And enam na kledayanti apaha. Apaha is water. Water cannot wet it. Na shoshayati marutaha. And marutaha is air. Air cannot dry it. And actually there are only four ways anything can be destroyed. You say, well, how about nuclear weapons? How about car accidents? So all come in this. So shastrani, when he says shastrani, in those days he was talking about, you know, sword and spear which can cut. But now you can say nuclear weapons. You know, nuclear weapons cannot destroy it. Grenades cannot destroy it. A car hits it, cannot kill it. The Atma cannot be destroyed by any weapons, any instruments. Why is that? Now, why is that? You said this sword cannot cut this Atma. Think about it. Gross cannot destroy the subtle. Subtle can destroy gross, but gross cannot destroy subtle like a sword. Now, with a sword, I can cut somebody's head. Right? Or there is a piece of wood, I can chop it. If there's a tree, I can just cut it, because they're all gross like the sword. But with the sword, you tell him there is this, river and I want to cross the river. Can you cut the river in half so that I can cross? No, sword cannot cross because the water is subtler than the sword. Or you say there is a fire, you know, that is blocking my way. I need to get out of this house. I'm just surrounded by fire. I take a sword and I try to cut the fire, it won't. Fire cannot cut water, cannot cut fire. Sword cannot cut water, cannot cut fire. Can you cut the air with sword? No. What about space, which is the subtlest? So when a sword cannot cut all these things, how can it cut Atma, the consciousness, which is subtler than space? Whole of space is enclosed in that. So which is the subtlest cannot be cut by the sword. So weapons cannot cut it. And same thing, a nuclear bomb. See, there is a nuclear explosion in Hiroshima and all the homes were destroyed. People were killed. Okay. Water, it can pollute. Okay, the water became radioactive. Even the air, it can become radioactive for years afterwards, the pollution, you know, the radioactivity. But can it pollute the space? No. Space is unaffected, even with nuclear weapons. Up to the air it can pollute, but it cannot pollute the space. So how can that pollute Atma, the consciousness, which is even subtler than space? So that which is subtlest cannot be cut by the sword. How about fire? The same thing applies to fire. Fire can burn wood. Water it cannot burn, but it can, you know, heat up the water, melt, make it evaporate. Air, it can warm up the air, but it cannot warm up space. It cannot warm up the space, it can warm up the air, and obviously it cannot burn the space. So forget about burning Atma. How about water? You know, water can also destroy, like we saw in Houston. You know, water can destroy in two ways. One is by flooding. So people were killed and the homes were destroyed in the flood. Or it can destroy by wetting it, like the homes we see now. There are some of the homes in Houston have so much mold and mildew because of wetting that the homes are useless. They have to be destroyed, bulldozed, and new homes have to be built. So water can either destroy by flooding or by wetting, where it makes the thing not useful at all, or even something like say a cracker or a biscuit, you know, which you want to eat, and or a piece of bread or something, when it gets wet completely, you say, I don't want to eat this, it's wet, you know. Or because why? Because there are holes in it and water can enter into the bread or into the cookie, and it becomes so wet and soggy, you don't feel like eating it, you know. You say, this is wet and it, I don't want to eat it. But water cannot wet iron, because iron doesn't have holes, so water cannot penetrate. It can penetrate into the bread, it can penetrate into the cookie. So if it cannot penetrate into iron, how can it penetrate into that space? So water cannot destroy it. And obviously air cannot dry it. Air can dry things, like if there is a lake, air can, you know, destroy it by drying it. So there is no water left. There is a small lake with the air. Or air, if it becomes a tornado or becomes a big storm, it can cause wholesale destruction. You know, it can destroy homes and people can perish and all. But air again cannot destroy space. And consciousness is even subtler than space. So that consciousness cannot be destroyed by any of these four means of destruction. So our rishis also said that to destroy anything, three methods are required. One is natural, one is support, and one is by something else. So natural is a person gets old. You know, there's no reason to die. They say, why did he pass? He was just too old. And he couldn't even barely walk. He couldn't eat. And just out of old age, he passed away. He was just basically lost interest in life. So one is natural, that through old age, and it can happen same thing, our car. And after a while, it becomes old and it's barely running. And then you see, say, I spent so much money in repair. Now it's not worth repairing. The cost of repair is more than the cost of the car. So you just get rid of it. You send it to the junkyard. It got old. Nothing happened to it. It's just too old. It doesn't work. Second is you withdraw the support. Same thing, the human being. One is can perish by old age. And second is you withdraw support. What is my support? Food and water. So if somebody is, you know, kept in a prison and not given food and not given water as a punishment, then what happens? You know, the person perishes. Or like we see sometimes people go on hunger strike. Like nowadays the doctors in Karnataka are on hunger strike because of lot of laws that the government had passed, and he says, the leader said, he will fast unto death. So he's not going to eat anything as a means of protest. So when you withdraw food or water, you're withdrawing the support. That is the second way to perish. Third is other. Other means somebody else can be the cause of my death. As I said, it can be a car accident, it can be disease, it can be cancer, it can be a gun or a knife or a fall. So those are other methods. So somebody else is responsible. Something else or somebody else is responsible. So Atma cannot be either of them. You cannot. Atma has no natural death because it is always there. It was never born. It never dies. So God or consciousness always was there. That's why you say, Ajo Nitya Shashvata Yam Puranaha Nahanyate Hanyamane Sharire. Last week we had studied. So it is unborn. It is eternal. It is ancient, and it is, the body is destroyed, but the Atma, the consciousness, is not destroyed. So it cannot perish on its own. How about if you remove the Atma's support? Atma or consciousness has no support. It supports everything else. Everything else, that's why it is the is. That's why they say God has three aspects: Sat, Chit, Anand, existence, consciousness, and bliss. So whatever exists is supported by that Lord, the consciousness, the Atma. So it supports everything else, but it has no other support. So you cannot withdraw support from Atma. And as we said, Atma cannot be destroyed by others. We already talked about it. Weapons, fire, water, air. None of these can destroy it. So people always think Atma is this all-pervading consciousness, it is God, it is Brahman, it is the support of everything, and that is good. But you have to translate that into that Atma is me, because I am also that. This Om, this consciousness, is my higher nature. So my lower nature is this body, mind and intellect. But my higher nature is Om or consciousness. So with the body, I perceive the objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. With the intellect, I think the thoughts. So these objects, emotions, thoughts, which is the world, is perceived by me. But Om, the consciousness, is my higher nature. So that Atma is me. Because we always think, you know, Atma is this all-powerful, pervading, and God is everywhere, He's powerful, and I have to bow down, which is good. We are not saying you don't, because at this right now, we are not at the level where I can think of myself as Atma. I think of myself as this body, mind, and intellect. And as long as I am in this human body, I have to still go to the temple and pray. I should go to the church and bow down to Jesus. I should... Even Shankaracharya ji, great Vedantin who taught us Vedanta, he also used to visit the temples. And when he visited Ganpati temple, he composed a hymn for Ganpati. When he visited Mother Goddess, he composed that, you know, Mahishasur Mardini. So the point is that as long as I'm in this body, I'm under the restraints of this body. My body is limited. I will go through emotions. I will go through... So I should continue to worship the Lord as long as I am the body. But inside I have to understand that God and I are one. I am not separate. Because God is everywhere. If you say God is in the chair table, then why is He not in me? I am in me also. So that understanding I have to come, that God and I are one. There is no difference between the two of us. At the highest level, at the body level, I am His servant. At the mind and intellect level, I am part of Him. But as the consciousness, God and I are one. So this thing has to be dealt with three languages. Doesn't mean a walk around saying, I am God. No, I am this limited human being. But what is sustaining me is God. What is illumining my mind, what is making me talk, what is making me walk, what is my accomplishments are all due to God. But I am this limited individual, but inside I have to understand that I am. And once you become that, that's why these great saints and prophets, whether you look at Mirabai or Tukaram or Narasimha Mehta or Jesus or Buddha, once they attained that oneness, then they became immortal. Then they were always alive. No matter how long, billions of, however long earth is, as long as there is one Christian on earth, they will remember Christ. As long as there is one Buddhist on earth, they will remember Buddha. As long as there is one Chinmaya mission, you know, Guru, they will always be remembered. So these great souls become immortal because they become one with that. But it is not going to happen suddenly. See, one, you walk out of the class, say, I am Brahman. It's not going to happen suddenly. It is repeated listening. Then you go home and think about it. And then you go home and apply it in your life. That if I am this Atma, this consciousness, then the body pains and should not affect me. Yes, if my body hurts, I'll go take medicine, but I don't let it put me down. Same way, if I have some stress or some conflict, I remain calm because I remain above it. So it's a gradual process. It's not going to happen overnight. It's gradual. Talking about gradual, so this boy asked his father. Father was a millionaire. Dad, how did you become a millionaire? He said, son, it happened like this. Many years ago when I was young, I found two apples in my tree in my backyard. We had two apples. So I polished them with my shirt. I went to the market. I sold each apple for 50 cents. I made a dollar. Then I went with a dollar to the wholesale market, bought four apples, 25 cents each. Took them to the shop. There I sold each one for 50 cents. So from $1, I got $2. Then from $2, I got 8 apples. And then I sold them, I got 16. And then I built a small little shack. And there I was making $25 and $50 a month, because that's how I was doing with the apples. I was making $50 a month. So son said, then what happened, father? He said, then my father-in-law died and left me $2 million. So that's how gradually he became a millionaire. So, but in your and my case, the spiritual journey is slow, it's progress, but it has to be constant, and that is very important, the consistency. Every day I should read a little bit, every day I should do some prayers, every day I should meditate, every day I should apply this. So gradual progress is happens. So it's not going to happen overnight, but it needs sustained effort. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhagavi. Shanti, 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namah, Hari Om. Thank you so much.